to 'Cause We're Nerds, the podcast that covers trends and new releases in comics, movies, video games, board games, and much more. I'm your host, Zach, and with me is my co-host and cousin, Caleb.
Hey everyone!
Thanks for joining us in our current series, Road to Marvel's Infinity War, where we will be discussing each MCU movie in release order, all leading up to Marvel's Avengers Infinity War, coming out this April. Things are about to get a little strange as we dive into the world of mysticism and magic in Marvel's Doctor Strange. How did Marvel handle introducing magic into a scientifically grounded universe, and did it work? What is the Wand of Watoom, the Boots of Valtor, and the Staff of the Living Tribunal? And is Doctor Strange actually set in the year 2016, or could it be set a few years earlier during the events of the Winter Soldier? Find out the answers to these questions and much more on 'Cause We're Nerds, Road to Marvel's Infinity War, Doctor Strange. All right, Caleb, so we finally get an odd Marvel movie, Doctor Strange, played by Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, you mean Benadryl Cabbage Patch?
Yes, Wimbledon Tennis Match.
Oh, Bendy Cat Cookie Batch.
Battleborg Crumpet Patch.
Bulbasaur Crispy Snacks?
Booberry Caramel Snacks.
Bradbury Pringle Batch.
Buffalo Custard Bath.
Bannister Cramble Crunch.
Benevolent Computer Glitch?
Ben Affleck Camera Catch?
Blunderbush Cashew Chips?
Bumblebee Baggage Claim.
Oh, you're talking about the Burlington Coat Factory.
Oh, yes. I love the Burlington Coat Factory. He's pretty good.
All right, so the memes abound with Doctor Strange played by Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes. Sherlock Holmes himself.
That is correct. So Doctor Strange launches us into an epic multiverse in the MCU. So I'm assuming, Caleb, as we talked about in our last podcast for Civil War, Doctor Strange was announced with all the Phase 3 movies in that slate. Is that correct?
Yes, it was definitely announced, but it had kind of been in development before that point.
Ah, tell me more.
So, in our Ant-Man episode, you might remember I called it the definition of trouble development. This is worse.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so this goes all the way back to the 80s. A lot of these seem to go back to the 80s. We haven't had that in a while. But yeah, back then there was a couple scripts floating around at different places. There was a script from a guy named Bob Gale who co-wrote Back to the Future. It was never produced. Later on, there was a script from a guy named Alex Cox and Stan Lee. They co-wrote it. And it wasn't made over merchandising rights, and that was with Warner Brothers. And then in the 90s, Wes Craven, who you might know from the Nightmare on Elm Street and Scream franchises, mm-hmm. actually signed on to write and direct.
Okay, so it had a timid start.
Yeah, to say the least. And I'm not really sure if this is connected to that Wes Craven one or not, but at some point, David Goyer wrote a script, and he did a lot of the DC films. He was very involved in the Dark Knight trilogy and a lot of their recent films that they've done. So it's interesting that he was kind of connected to the superhero property back then.
But obviously none of these actually came to fruition.
Right. So after that happened, Columbia Pictures got the rights and dumped everything and started again. And then fast forward a few years into the 2000s, Dimension Films got the rights. Again, just kind of dumping stuff and starting back over. At some point, Goyer was hired back as a writer and director. That fell through. Miramax wow. got the rights.
No.
This has been all over. Yeah, man, it's rough. Ultimately, Paramount got the rights on behalf of Marvel. I don't really know how that works or what that means, but basically Marvel Studios ended up with the rights. And this was part of that financing that they did in 2005 to start making their own movies.
Okay, so, and at the helm we have Scott Derrickson, who is directing, and I do know that he is actually a huge Doctor Strange fan, and when he heard about this film, he used his own money to make a concept video, which he pitched to Marvel and helped him get the gig.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if it was a video, but he did write a 12-page scene. He hired people to do concept art, all kinds of stuff to do this. And the thing he wrote actually ends up in this film, Zach. It's the astral projection fight in the hospital, which actually comes from a comic book itself. But yeah, storyboards, animatics. But he wasn't the only contender.
Who else was up for it?
So also up was Mark Andrews, who did John Carter and worked on Brave. And Jonathan Levine, who directed and wrote Warm Bodies.
Nice.
Yeah, so a couple different names in here, but really nowhere near as many as some of our other films. And according to Marvel, well, this just contradicts what I just said, but not as many people seriously in consideration, but there was more people than any other film for Marvel that wanted to direct this film.
Do you think that was because Doctor Strange is just different from a lot of the other MCU movies?
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, Scott Derrickson comes from a horror movie background. I didn't look up his filmography, things that he had done previous to this, but Doctor Strange lends itself really well to horror and that genre. And I think that there's a whole lot of horror movies in Hollywood. And, you know, people want to play with horror. And this is even different because it's very much magical. The only other magic franchises I can really think of are the big one, Harry Potter. But it's, you know, very different itself from this.
Okay, yeah.
So after Scott was hired, Marvel bought that stuff that he pitched to them, that 12-page scene, that's how it ends up in the movie. And a guy named John Spates was hired to write. He really wanted this gig. He almost didn't get it. Pretty much he pestered Marvel so much that they gave it to him because they were impressed with his passion.
That's awesome, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, hard work pays off. But yeah, so Scott Derrickson, like I mentioned, he does come from horror. He wanted this character called Nightmare as the villain.
That is correct. Yeah, Nightmare is one of the main villains of Doctor Strange in the comic books.
Yeah, so I'm not super familiar with him. I think I've read a comic or two with him in it. I know that his whole thing is like this dream dimension, and that's actually why they didn't do it, is because Kevin Feige felt that explaining the dream dimension was too difficult in a film that was already explaining so many other things.
Yeah, the first appearance of Doctor Strange, that's his enemy. His enemy is Nightmare, who is in the dream dimension. Yeah, in the his like first appearance in a comic book ever. So that makes sense. I actually have a theory that if we get a Doctor Strange 2, we will dive into the dream dimension and Nightmare for sure.
Yeah, okay, that's really interesting. So now that we've got the director and writer on board, Zach, we've got some cast members.
We do. So we have the Burlington Coat Factory. I mean, Benedict Cumberbatch as Dr. Stephen Strange. We have Chiwetel Ejiofor as Mordu. We have Rachel McAdams playing Dr. Christine Palmer. Mads Mikkelsen as Caecilius. Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One. And my favorite, Benedict Wong playing Wong.
Born for the role.
Wong appeared apparently in The Martian, the 2015 film. I don't remember him at all.
Yeah, I don't remember him either.
Who I do know and who you also know is Benedict Cumberbatch from, I mean, he has such a rich filmography. We know, you know, Sherlock, as we talked about in our last podcast, as well as Imitation Game, Star Trek. He was the voice of Smaug in The Hobbit.
But he wasn't the only one in contention for this.
That's correct.
So there's a long list of people. Most of you guys know all these people, so I'm not going to explain what they've been in. But here we go. We've got Jared Leto. Interesting choice.
Oh, no.
Ethan Hawke, Oscar Isaac, which ended up going over to the X-Men franchise. Ewan McGregor, Matthew McConaughey, Jake Gyllenhaal, Colin Farrell, and Ryan Gosling were all in talks or considered to be in this film.
That's correct. Now, Cumberbatch actually was the first choice. Interestingly enough, he had to turn it down when they offered him the part because he had a schedule conflict with Shakespeare's Hamlet. And so they went on to approach Joaquin Phoenix for the same role.
Yes, and I remember that was really heavily rumored at the time that he would be Doctor Strange, and I was on board for it. I don't know a lot of his filmography, but I do know that he's a great actor, and so I was excited for that prospect.
Yeah, I think it would have been an okay job. I know that this was very polarizing in the community. Some people hated him, some people loved him. I'm indifferent, but I guess we'll never know because he actually ended up turning down the role because he didn't want to sign for a multi-picture deal with Marvel. And so they approached Cumberbatch again, who is now free after getting done with Shakespeare's Hamlet.
Yeah, and they actually even moved production of this film so that Cumberbatch could play the character.
Now, Chiwetel Ejiofor, I knew him from 12 Years a Slave. And I don't know if you know this, Caleb, but he's actually a fifth degree black belt. So what? A lot of the action, yeah, a lot of the stuff he doesn't need a stunt double. It's him.
I had no idea. Wow.
Now, another character you might be familiar with, thanks to your wife, is Rachel McAdams. You know, I know her from The Notebook, Mean Girls, The Vow. You could go on and on.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, she's a fantastic actor, though, and I think she did a great job here.
Yeah, I agree. And one of my friends, one of the only reasons he went to see this was because she was in it.
Classic.
So next we've got Mads Mikkelsen. Now, we talked about him in one of our earlier episodes. He was considered for a different villain, but he ended up here in Doctor Strange.
Mads Mikkelsen plays a lot of villains in movies. I know him from Casino Royale.
Oh, okay.
Just like Cumberbatch, Mikkelsen wasn't the only one up for this role. Actually, in fact, he was originally considered for Mordo instead of being Caecilius. And one other person that was considered for Caecilius I thought I would mention is Gary Oldman.
Really? They keep mentioning Gary Oldman. I think maybe his name just gets thrown around.
I'm sure one of these days he might pop up in an MCU movie, but DC might have got him first.
That would be really interesting, though, to see Mads as Mordo, because he's a lot closer to the comic version than the version in this film is.
Exactly. And then finally, for the Ancient One, who is not played by a Chinese male actor, we get Tilda Swinton, who is a female white actor.
Actress, yes. I know her primarily from The Chronicles of Narnia.
Yep.
Beyond that, I think I've seen her in things, but I couldn't tell you what it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. So Scott Derrickson actually didn't want to stereotype this role, and so he decided to cast a female with her in mind. And so he had Tilda Swinton in mind when casting this, and that's who he got to play the Ancient One. Somebody else who was up for contention for this role was Morgan Freeman.
Oh, I would have liked that, but I feel like maybe it would have taken you out of the movie.
Exactly. It would have been a very interesting choice with Morgan Freeman in it, but I think Swinton did an excellent job here.
Yeah, and that casting was pretty polarizing. I mean, people were almost up in arms because it's not an Asian actress or actor. Something similar kind of happened with Danny in Iron Fist. I don't know why. He's not that way in the comics, but people wanted to see an Asian actor or actress.
Exactly. Well, Caleb, we went through the casting. We went through some of the background. We went through a ton of Benadryl Cumberbatch's names. So are you ready to dive into the multiverse?
Let's do it, Zach. Dr. Stephen Strange's life changes after a car accident robs him the use of his hands. When traditional medicine fails him, he looks for healing and hope in the mystical haven Kamar-Taj. He quickly learns that the group is at the forefront of a struggle against unseen dark forces bent on destroying reality. Shocked by the revelation, Strange must decide whether to stand and fight or return to his life of luxury.
All right, so this movie opens with a new Marvel logo that we haven't seen before. And Caleb, I love this because this new Marvel logo doesn't use the comics. It uses shots from the MCU. And for me, it's Marvel making a statement that they have finally established themselves with a cinematic universe that, hey, this is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This isn't another comic universe. This is our own.
Yeah, I think this is a really, really great new logo. I think they've got new music with it too, a new fanfare. It's great. I think the timing was really good because they had been around for, 8 years at this point? And they had really built up a wealth of films. This is their 14th film, so they'd kind of know what they've been doing and they've built up their fan base. And so, exactly what you said. It's a statement that it's a movie company and not a comic company.
And Caleb, you said it was scored differently. It was scored by Michael Giacchino, who actually went on to score all of Doctor Strange.
Okay, cool. Something kind of funny and interesting to note is this is our second movie in Phase 3, if I'm right.
Yep.
The last logo change we got was Thor: The Dark World, which was the second movie in Phase 2.
All right, so will we get a new logo, the second movie in Phase 4?
Yeah, I'm calling it right now. New logo. I don't know what they could do, but I'm sure it'll be great.
So after our new Marvel logo, we open up to a library in Kamar-Taj, and we see Caecilius and the Acolytes stealing pages for a ritual when they are then chased by the Ancient One through the streets of London and narrowly escape.
Yeah, and this is a pretty intense opening. We see in the first minute, Caecilius cuts off a dude's head, and then they run out and we get mind-bending, trippy magic.
Exactly. I thought it was a great opening to kick us off into this new world.
Right off the bat, I am very impressed with the visuals for this film. A lot of this stuff was shown in the trailers, a lot of the city folding kind of kaleidoscope look. It doesn't matter. It still looks fantastic.
It really does. They set the stage very well for this movie.
Yeah, and as I mentioned up top, this is set apart from Harry Potter, the franchise that we'd had for, I don't know, almost a decade at that point, maybe more than a decade, which is really the cultural touchstone for magic, I think, when this came out. And so they were looking for a new way to show magic. And I think that the visual language that they established in this film wasn't just new for magic. It was new for Marvel, and it was a new concept altogether that nobody had ever seen.
And so after this chase scene, we visit the hospital and get introduced to our lead character, Dr. Stephen Strange. And right off the bat, Caleb, he asserts himself in A, how intelligent he is, B, the skills he has, and C, what a douche he is, kind of all in one.
Well, Zach, I actually thought this was strange, no pun intended. I didn't think that he was that much of a jerk here at the beginning. In fact, I found him quite likable and funny. And they talk a lot about his arrogance in this first scene. I don't feel that you see it very much until later on.
Yeah, when I first watched this, I thought he was a jerk. Rewatching it again, I would say that this time he is more egotistical than anything, versus in the comic books, he's very cold. Which, talking about the comic books, are you familiar with him in the comics?
Not a ton. So I'd read Infinity Gauntlet, everyone's in that, so I'd read him in that, and some of the crossovers, but nothing from his own series.
Sure, I've read some Defenders. I've read a couple of his comics in the series. For this podcast, I went back and I read at least the first three issues that he appears in. And so Doctor Strange was created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko in 1963, and he appeared in Strange Tales, issue 110.
In fact, that's actually why he's called Doctor Strange, is because they were looking for a name. And because he was appearing in Strange Tales, they chose that.
Close. There's actually a villain that appeared earlier on in Strange Tales, and as Stan Lee stated in an interview, they were looking for a name, and so they can combine some of the title, like you just said, but also just decided to pull the name from that villain. Nobody remembered him, and thus calling him Dr. Strange. And in fact, they were originally going to call him Mr. Strange, but changed it because he thought his name was too much like Mr. Fantastic of the Fantastic Four.
And I think that's a good call. And also, you said this was created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, which it is. But Stan Lee was on record in a letter that he wrote way back in the 60s that actually said this was Steve's idea.
It really is. It's basically all of Ditko's idea. And Lee just kind of partnered with him on it.
Yeah, which if you actually look into the history, he did with a lot of different characters.
That is correct. And so Strange Tales was actually not a solo book. It comprised a lot of heroes. And so originally, Doctor Strange shared it with the Human Torch, not the android, but Johnny Storm from the Fantastic Four. And then later on, he goes on to share the same book with Nick Fury. And I mean, in it, he's basically like the Doctor Strange we get in this movie. He's kind of egotistical, full of himself. Now, what I will say is in the comics, he's a lot more cold. Like, there's panels of, like, doctors coming out of the room and shouting, "Dr. Strange, your patient would like to say thank you." And he's like, "I just need the bill." Literally, he just cares about money. And then there's other panels where they're like, "We would love to interview you on, you know, whatever neurological thing you're doing now." And he's like, "When your nonprofit gives me money, I'll talk to you then." It's like,
oh yeah,
he is very cold. He's actually, his character is based on the actor Vincent Price in Hollywood. You might know him from the Ten Commandments movie, but that very old movie.
Oh, yeah. I was not aware of that.
That's right. So his backstory is basically what we get in the comics. He's in a car crash. He is saved by Dr. Nicodemus West, who we actually see in the movie, who's able to save him, but not repair his hands as he's had extensive nerve damage and lost the use of his hands.
Yeah, and this is the guy that he makes fun of in the beginning of the movie.
That is correct. And so here's fairly popular. His comic ran for a few years, and issue 169, it split, which was kind of interesting because he got his own Doctor Strange comic, and then Nick Fury got his own comic, and then the Strange Tales comic kept going as well. So it kind of split into three comics. And so since he was kind of on that Strange Tales comic, his first solo series starts at issue 169.
Really? So they just counted everything that he'd already been in?
I guess so. Why it's also interesting is when he starts that, it also introduces another sorcerer, which we'll talk about a little later, Brother Voodoo, who's probably the other kind of really important sorcerer in the comics.
Okay, yeah, so that's very interesting, Zach.
But apparently, Doctor Strange comics sold incredibly well because it was countercultural. In fact, Roy Thomas, who we've talked about him before, he's done a lot of stints on Avengers, said that people love the art style here and actually thought of a lot of Marvel's writers, like Ditko, were druggies, because they said what they saw in the comics were the same exact thing that people would see while high on shrooms.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised because, what, this was the 60s, 70s?
That's right. You know, Stan Lee states that they were just making stuff up, like that Doctor Strange would shout random incantations such as the Eye of Agamotto, the Wand of Watoom, the Hoary Hosts of Haggoth. And, just strange stuff that they were coming up with. It's been actually very successful. He's had 4 volume runs, and his second volume is when he gets the title Sorcerer Supreme, and he also gets the Eye of Agamotto. And he's helped form a team, the Defenders, you might be familiar with them,
yep.
Who are like non-hero characters like Namor, the Hulk, and other stuff like that.
Yeah, and he's also part of the Illuminati.
And if you're not familiar, the Illuminati in the comics are basically your very high-functioning, either on power level or intelligence, kind of key figures in the comics. So you have Reed Richards, Namor, Tony Stark.
Doctor Strange.
I'm missing 2 more. I think Hank Pym was in there, possibly.
Yeah, he might have been. We'll probably talk about them a little bit more in Thor Ragnarok and their involvement with that type of story in the comics.
So, Caleb, we also get Dr. Christine Palmer. Did you know that she is from the comics, but she is not from a Doctor Strange comic?
I did know she was from the comics. I did not know she wasn't, because I know absolutely nothing about this character.
Yeah. So she was created apparently by Jean Thomas and Roy Thomas, and she appeared in issue 1 of Night Nurse, which was a 1972 issue. It only ran 4 issues. It was about 3 female leads. She isn't even the main one. She's like another one. The main one's like Linda Carter. And just to give you a description of what this comic is, on the front of the comic, it says, "Enter the world of danger, drama, and death." And you see the main Night Nurse standing there, and on one side, there's like an injured guy that looks like he was just crushed by a car, and he says, "I'm hurt bad, I've got to get help." Uh-huh. And so Linda Carter, the main Night Nurse, says, "He's hurt bad, I've got to get him help or he'll die, but if I do, I'll lose the man I love." And in the background, there's a man who says, "Stop, you don't know what you're doing." Like,
what? It's a soap opera.
it is. So apparently they just took her name and some of her source material and inserted her into the movie.
Interesting. We also get another Night Nurse in the MCU in the Netflix shows, starting with Daredevil. That is, what's her name? Dawson. That's her character, the nurse in those shows. She is one of the Night Nurses. I think there's been 3 in the comics.
There is, correct. So after a scene in the hospital, Dr. Stephen Strange goes to give his next lecture or talk. And while he's on the road, he is texting and I believe also calling at the same time while driving insanely fast.
Very safe.
But he's looking up a couple new patients to operate on. And one of them is a 35-year-old colonel crushed his spine with experimental armor. Sounds familiar.
Yes, it does, Zach. And if you've been paying attention, you'll probably recognize that this is Rhodey, James Rhodes, from the fallout of Civil War.
But I actually think it isn't Rhodey, because the director has come out and stated that it was unintentional and didn't mean to be about Rhodey.
Yeah, and I've heard that before, but just like with Spider-Man, I mean, does it really matter?
It actually will. I'll talk about it a little later. And the music playing here is also interesting. The music we get is Pink Floyd. It's a song called Interstellar Overdrive that is playing. Why that's interesting is apparently Pink Floyd was an admirer of the comic, and Doctor Strange is put on the cover of their second album in 1968.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, Pink Floyd, shrooms, Doctor Strange, they all kind of go hand in hand
together. That makes sense. So, Zach, you said he crashes here because he's texting. This is the reason given in this movie, but the reason across all the media of Doctor Strange kind of changes. You'll probably know because you read that first comic again, and that is just a panel. It doesn't even give a reason. It just says he crashed.
Yep.
Later on in the comics, they kind of retcon that to say that he did it on purpose. He was trying to kill himself because Mordo had tormented him for years because Doctor Strange ended up being the chosen one, like it is in all kinds of movies now. And in another one, I think it's the animated movie, and it's drunk driving in that film.
That's really interesting. I didn't know they changed between the mediums.
Yeah, it's kind of, I guess, whatever's relevant, because what's important is that he does crash and that he loses some of his function, but not so much why.
And so we find that out on his road to recovery, as he also finds that out. We get a couple scenes of him just trying new procedures, new techniques, and he is not regaining his hands well enough to be able to do the surgery he was able to do. And Caleb, it's kind of through these scenes that I at least got the similarity that Doctor Strange is kind of like Stark. They're both kind of arrogant, both kind of about themselves. I don't know if you got that same feeling, but I certainly did.
Well, yeah, they're both two rich guys that have goatees. I mean, now, Zach, there's something here that I think is really, really poetic. And you see in these scenes that he's trying to get doctors to help him and they're refusing. At one point, one of them says he's got his reputation to think of.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a big, big parallel with what he was doing at the beginning of the movie. He was doing the exact same thing, saying, no, that's not a big enough challenge, or no, that's not going to get me the reputation I need. And so he has almost literally become the patients that he refused to help. He's had a massive role reversal with those others. And I think this is what really starts to break him down so that he can come back as a better person.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in one of the scenes we get, he is at rehab and learns that there might be another patient that was able to overcome such an extraordinary damage to his body. Now, I would like to point out that this is a major plot hole, because he basically goes home and whoever was doing his rehab gives him the records.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds out that this man was Jonathan Pangborn, played by Benjamin Bratt, who is not in the comics, was just added for the movie purposes. Anyways, the fact that he got his hands on those records, that would never happen because it violates HIPAA. And somebody who is conducting rehab on you would never just hand you out patient records just because.
Yeah, so my family is pretty much just made up of medical people.
That's
so
true.
I'm pretty familiar with this. I found it very, very strange that not only does he get to look at them, the dude just casually mails them to him.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, I could have gone, I mean, look, it doesn't bother me that much, but I could have gone with it a little bit more if the guy that was doing rehab just showed them to him, because it could be like a backroom deal, like, look, I'm not supposed to do this, but because you're a doctor, I'm going to help you out. But yeah, mailing it to them would never happen.
But that does give Dr. Strange the motivation to head to Kathmandu, Nepal, and as he looks for Kamar-Taj. And so here, Caleb, we actually get a deleted scene. Dr. Strange is actually helping a wounded dog on the side of the street. He takes compassion on it. He helps it. And then that's when it cuts right into him kind of getting beat up and Mordu saving him. So I know that the directors say they actually cut that scene because it kind of undermines his character a little bit. He's kind of a douche, but then he has a heart, but then he's a douche again. So they just cut that out to show that he doesn't have a heart. So here we see Mordu. We're introduced to him for the first time. And he actually is in the comics. His full name is Baron Carl Amadeus Mordu. A very long and interesting name.
Yes, yet another Baron.
That's right, another Baron. He appears in the same comic that introduced Doctor Strange. And if you read that comic, it's interesting because he began training with the Ancient One. And Doctor Strange showed up and basically caught him trying to kill the Ancient One. Oh. And so Mordu left. Yeah, it's a little odd, I guess. But in the comics, early on, Mordu actually seeks out the power of Dormammu, and he helps Dormammu enter his world and seeks the Dark Dimension power for himself. So, I mean, it's kind of what we get in this comic, but instead of Caecilius, it's Mordu. And in the comics, he's like this anti-Doctor Strange, mm-hmm. who's basically the same power level.
Yeah, he's kind of like his arch nemesis in a certain way.
And the only difference is that in the comics, he is Asian, I believe. Sometimes he looks white. I wasn't really sure.
Yeah, he's really big and built, too.
Yeah, and he wears green. And like he does wear green in the comics, or in the movie, if you look at it. But it's like this dark green and black. In the comics, it's this very vibrant, comic-y green.
So after Mordu kind of helps him through this fight, he takes him back to this magical place that he's been looking for, Kamar-Taj. And he comes in and he walks in and he looks to the right and he sees this guy. And he's like, oh, Ancient One, thank you for letting me in. Thank you for this. And it's a joke. Turns out this is not the Ancient One. This is a direct reference to the comic version, who we talked about is that old ancient Asian guy. But they subverted that for this film and we get Tilda Swinton.
That's right. And the Ancient One is in the comics. I mean, he's a male in the comics, right? And so he appears in that Doctor Strange comics. But interestingly enough, he actually appears before that in Amazing Adventures issue 1. which was in 1961. So he could be one of the oldest comic book characters we've talked about yet.
Is it the same version of the character?
Basically, I mean, it's a sorcerer.
Now, this guy that he looked at initially and thought was the Ancient One, we find out later in the film, this is Master Hamir, and he is also from the comic, Zach.
That's right. So again, he appears in the same Strange Tale, like this, the same Strange Tales 110 basically just has all of them in it. And in the comics, he has both hands instead of just one that we see. I mean, he's basically just a servant of the Ancient One. However, in the comics, it's later revealed that he is Wong's dad. Ooh, mystical.
Yeah, and at one point, he actually takes over from the Ancient One as kind of the caretaker of Kamar-Taj.
That's correct. Yep.
Now, Zach, it's here that, for me, I was a little disappointed with this film.
Why was that?
Having watched the animated movie, and that really being my introduction and sole knowledge of the character of Doctor Strange, I really loved the idea that this place was kind of like far off on a mountain somewhere. And I really liked that in this movie, he had to go to Nepal to get there. I didn't like that it was in the middle of the city. I wanted something similar to Kun Lun in the Iron Fist TV show, where it's just very much isolated. And because it's in the city, it felt less mystical to me.
Sure. I mean, I think that's a valid frustration with this movie. I think the reason that they did that is because they didn't want to go with a lot of the tropes. That's why the Ancient One's different. They didn't want to follow in the footsteps of Batman Begins, right? Mm-hmm. Or your basic kung fu movie where you go off to a distant mountain.
And that's a really good point you brought up, Zach, is Batman Begins. When that movie came out, people said, oh, this is basically the Doctor Strange origin. Like, this is the origin. And it is. And that's probably part of why they changed this. I do feel a little bit better as we move forward when we get to some of the training sequences. It feels a bit more mystical, but I just, I miss it.
Sure. Well, where that mysticism might be lacking in location, it definitely is accounted for in the CGI. So here is where he's not believing the Ancient One. The Ancient One basically pushes his astral form out of his body. And this is the first dimension that we're introduced to. Well, we actually get introduced to the mirror dimension beforehand, but like actually talked about. We see the astral dimension where souls are without body.
Yes, this is a very, very big thing in the comics. In fact, Doctor Strange uses this regularly to communicate with other people across the universe. And I like the way this looks. It's different. It's kind of ghostly, but not too ghostly. But yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I really liked it. And what I also liked is that they didn't sit there and explain it, but this kind of led into a very strange trip, no pun intended, where we get an explanation of the dimensions. And we're told here, because Doctor Strange basically just starts jumping through dimension and dimension and dimension, that there is an infinite number of universes, some good, some bad. Caleb, I'm going to just go ahead and state the dimension where your hands grow out of your fingers and more hands out of your fingers is a very bad dimension. That was so nasty.
I don't know, man. You'll always have a helping hand.
That's oh no. Hey. But I do like what the Ancient One says here, where she says, who are you in this vast multiverse? And that multiverse is dropped a couple more times throughout this movie, trying to establish the MCU as part of this multiverse.
Yes, and this is not just a casual thing. Oh, look, it's a multiverse. The multiverse is a word and a concept that's very heavily used in the comic books, especially in the past few years from us, Zach. It's 2018, so
yep.
In the past 6 years or so, it was a major plot point in the Spider-Man story, Spider-Verse. It was a major plot point in the new Secret Wars storyline and the Avengers line that followed up to that. And it's basically this idea that there are these infinite number of universes in the comics that normally takes shape in being like different versions of the same characters, right? And so that's how Spider-Verse works, is we have 100 different versions of Spider-Man. They could be anything. One's a pig, one's a punk rocker, one's a girl. I mean, you know, the list goes on. And so it's a really awesome concept that I really hope we get into in future Doctor Strange films.
And Marvel actually consulted with Adam Frank, who's an astrophysicist for this movie, who helped them come up with some ideas and changes that they could implement to this multiverse and how they could kind of explain these different dimensions in the movie.
Yeah, and that's really cool. And also, while he's going through this trip, at one point, He's traveling through space, and there's colors around him. It looks a lot like the Bifrost travel.
It really does. I mean, and it's very comic-y as well.
Oh, yeah. A lot of this film, especially the other dimensions, are very inspired by Steve Ditko's artwork. If you go back and look at those, it is mind-bending, trippy, and like, I don't know how you come up with the idea to draw stuff like that.
Shrooms, man. Shrooms. So Stephen Strange is kicked out. he's actually not allowed to stay. But then because he waits around so long, they decide to let him back in. And in a scene that is shown a ton, and I think all the trailers, is that he gets a Wi-Fi password, Shambhala.
This is a reference to a lot of stuff. It's the name of a story at one point called Into Shambhala, but it's also part of, it might be Buddhism. It's an idea.
Close. Tibetan Buddhism. And Hinduism. Yes, it's not an idea, it's an ancient city that's proposed to be out there somewhere. Yep.
Yeah, I think it actually shows up also in one of the Uncharted games. So, yeah, and around this point, we do get some foreshadowing between when Strange is kicked out and brought back in. Mordo goes and talks to the Ancient One, and we see her talking with these three other sorcerers, and then they turn around and leave. And this is foreshadowing the fact that in this film, we get multiple Sanctum Sanctorums, which in the comic books, as far as I know, there's always only been one.
Yeah, Caleb, I'll be honest. I'm not really sure about that fact. I know for sure there is one Sanctum Sanctorum. I think they might have retconned that after this Doctor Strange movie to make the comics more like the movies, but I am unsure.
All right. Well, he is readmitted, and he immediately goes into training.
That's right. And it's here that we get an explanation of magic and kind of explained how magic works. I thought that was interesting because it was very short explanation, but how the Ancient One states is that there's a source code that programs all reality. I got a very Matrix feel after that.
Well, she does say that, but that's kind of a way to further explain it. Her first explanation is that basically they take energy from the multiverse, from different dimensions, and bring it to them and control it. And I think that the source code thing is just a way to tell us, the audience, what she kind of means in a more tangible sense. I love this explanation, Zach. This movie gives us real magic as opposed to science magic, which is what we've gotten in the MCU up to this point with Thor, where they try to explain everything as being just a higher form of science. And so this is winning me over.
Yeah, Caleb, it's interesting because I think it's magic, but I don't think it's magic-y magic. It's not Harry Potter. You get a wand, you say some words, shabam. I think it somewhat is grounded in science. It's establishing, hey, there might be other universes out there, and we've just been able to tap into some type of energy, some type of form in those other universes and transfer it here. Because the filmmakers said that they wanted to define magic as dimensional traveling and shifting of other dimensions versus something just conjured up out of nowhere.
True. I mean, they do give that explanation, but I don't feel it's to the point where, like in Thor, they're like, oh, this is just quantum physics. And, you know, here, this is just other science. It's nice because at one point in the film, she literally says, not everything has to be explained. And I appreciate that.
And it's here we're also introduced to the side character and support role of Wong.
Yes, and an introduction that I really do not like because Doctor Strange makes all these Adele jokes.
I thought it was incredibly hilarious. Wong does appear in the comics in that Strange Tales 110 with everybody else. And he in the comics, he serves Doctor Strange. So after Doctor Strange goes back to America, Wong is sent with him to kind of be his apprentice and to serve him as well.
Yeah, but he's kind of like a manservant.
He is kind of like, he is a manservant. But Caleb, it's here that Wong drops the first words, Sorcerer Supreme.
Yes, and they don't really go into what this means in this movie. And in fact, at the end, Doctor Strange is not the Sorcerer Supreme, which is very interesting because in the comics, that's his thing. Like, that's his title. He is the Sorcerer Supreme.
That's right.
Also around this time, I think it's a little bit before this actually, Doctor Strange picks up this watch that he's been carrying around, and on the back of it, it's inscribed something like, time will tell how much I love you. This really just brings to the forefront for me, Zach, this whole time motif that this film has. I think that this film is structured very smartly and intelligently because there's these things that it does over and over that I really like, things that repeat. which also ties into this time, because time repeats. There's a lot of things in this film that have to do with time, right? At the beginning of the film, when we're first introduced to Strange, they try to do something and he's like, no, there's not enough time to do that. I'm going to go do it. There's time when he's waiting to be accepted into Kamar-Taj. He has to continually wait there. There's the Ancient One's age, which comes up later in the film, passing time. There's the Time Stone. It's all very thematically linked. And I think that that's a very smart way to write a film.
Yeah, I like that a lot. There's a good through line in this movie.
Agreed.
We're quickly transported to a random church and see Caecilius kind of conduct a ritual. And you might ask a question, why a random church? Why show this? And it's actually a shortened version of a deleted scene. So it's kind of explained that Caecilius needs to go here. It's part of the ritual. And then later on, there's another deleted scene and it's in an abandoned church. So obviously it has to do something with religion. And Mads Mikkelsen here gets more screen time, which I think was kind of needed for his character.
Yeah, and my question at this point is, how long has it been since he's left Kamar-Taj?
To me, it seems fairly recent, and so he's kind of carrying out his plan.
Okay, yeah, and I don't think there's a good answer for that without maybe asking the director himself.
So we jump back to Kamar-Taj, and Caleb, I'd just like to point out the costumes. I thought it was interesting that they have Caecilius and the Acolytes wear a vibrant color, yellow, and it's not like a dark color like most movies would have the enemies wear. And on the other hand, you have the Ancient One and the trainees wear a very dark color. They're wearing all gray instead of like a bright yellow or green or another color. I actually really enjoyed the costumes.
Yeah, I think the costumes are one of the highlights of this film. They are all beautiful. And I think part of that comes from necessity, right? So Doctor Strange's costume is blue and red, right? And so you want something that's going to contrast that for the villains so you can see them. One of the big complaints of the Transformers series of movies is that when they're fighting, you can't tell which one's which because they're all the same color. And so what you try to do is when you have people in fight scenes like this, you try to have different color palettes. And so you pick something that is contrasting to Doctor Strange, and yellow is a good color. Yellow orange is a good color for that. He actually has that color in his costume in the comics. It's not really translated that way in this movie, and so I think it makes it a really good candidate to use for the villains.
We are also introduced to the sling ring here. So we see a sling ring. Doctor Strange is trying to train with it and told that this is the way you travel through the multiverses. You have to have this ring. Now it's kind of departing from the comics. It's very different. You can just jump through the dimensions, but here you have to have this special ring. However, I think they kind of break their own rules because it's right after they introduce the sling ring, Caleb, that we see the mirror dimension, and that's kind of explained. But the Ancient One is just able to summon the mirror dimension, and they just appear inside the mirror dimension, and we don't see them use the sling ring to enter from, like, your regular Earth into the mirror dimension.
Yeah, there's some inconsistencies with this. Later on in the film, they mention that if they're trapped in the mirror dimension, they really want to have their sling ring so they can get out. I have a lot of mixed feelings about this. So first, let's start with the sling rings themselves. I don't like them because, like you said, in the comics, they can just go anywhere. They did this to help limit magic. There's a couple things in this movie they've done to prevent magic from being a be-all, end-all, and that makes a lot of sense, especially when you have a shared universe. I wish they didn't because I like to be able to, you know, just crazy things happen. In terms of the mirror dimension, that's also really strange. I don't really see the mirror dimension as a, quote, different dimension. I see it as, like, just I don't really know how to explain it. It's part of our world. We just don't have access to it. And I also wonder if maybe as you get better with magic, you can enter these other dimensions without the sling rings. Because they never actually say the sling ring is the only way to enter and exit these places. Because the Ancient One does it several times without it. At the very beginning, when she's fighting Caecilius, she does it. She does it when she introduces Doctor Strange to it. But other characters, you do see them using the sling rings to get into it. So I think maybe it's more like a training wheel.
Sort of. You know, I think the mirror dimension, it is a separate dimension. Like a lot of the dimensions, it's just, it's different in the fact that it's kind of always around us. And now that you talk about it, Caleb, I think you can enter the mirror dimension, but you can't leave the mirror dimension without a sling ring. Because we've seen a ton of people leave it and they always leave it with the sling ring, but whenever you're entering it, you can just enter it without that. So it's kind of odd. It breaks some of the rules, but as you mentioned before, Caleb, and this, it's at this scene where the Ancient One states everything does make sense, but not everything has to, which is kind of a throwaway line that states some of this might not make sense, but that's okay.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also around this time that Doctor Strange gets tired of his long beard that he's grown through his travels.
That's right.
And he decides to shave.
So we get a comic-looking Doctor Strange, finally. And Caleb, we also get, I thought, some funny scenes talking about Beyonce and stealing some books between Wong and Strange. I actually love their relationship here. They're both very
stoic.
Yes. Yeah, I like that word. Wong's probably more so. So Strange kind of plays off of that. I love their relationship. I'm looking forward to seeing more of it in Infinity War.
Yeah, I agree. It was really good. And then following these library scenes that they do have, we get more training and we're introduced to some relics.
That's right. And it's in this conversation, too, that we get the multiverse name dropped about four more times. So this movie makes sure that the idea of the multiverse comes up again and again and again.
So these relics that they're using to train with Zach, a lot of these, well, all of them, I think, are references to different comic book things. The first one we get is the Staff of the Living Tribunal. Now, in the comics, this is not a weapon. The Living Tribunal is an entity. I believe he's the embodiment of the multiverse.
Close. There's actually somebody else who is in the embodiment of the multiverse. The Living Tribunal is more humanoid cosmic being who is the safeguard of the multiverse.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And he's got like three different faces, kind of a strange design.
Yeah. So the Living Tribunal actually appeared in Doctor Strange 147, and he later dies in New Avengers 30, which was in 2015. But interestingly enough, his first encounter on Earth was with Doctor Strange, which I'm sure is from that Strange Tales comic.
So the next relic we get is the Vaulting Boots of Voltar.
Yes, which are not in the comics. In the movie, Mordu wears them. Voltar is just a deity in the comics, and you just hear some of his spells, like the Vipers of Voltar and the Vapors of Voltar. It's actually the Vipers of Voltar. And the first Doctor Strange comic, Mordu summons to kill the Ancient One. And he's like, oh no, it's the Vipers of Voltar. I'm going to die. And then nothing happens. Like, it's like, what?
So we also get the Wand of Wotum.
Yep. So the Wand of Wotum is the actually only relic that is an actual relic in the comics. It's the Wicked Wands of Wotum. There's six of them. And apparently these things are incredibly powerful. If you have one of them, you have near omnipotent power where you can just think of something and it happens. So they're like almost more powerful than Infinity Stones. Like at one point, Doctor Strange takes one of the staffs and breaks it in half because it's so powerful. And these things were actually introduced in Amazing Spider-Man Annual Number 2 in 1965.
Wow, going way back. Okay.
Yeah.
While we're training, we kind of get some more explanations like you mentioned. And the doctor we see, he's kind of excelling very quickly. And so he's making a lot of trips to the library. And his first trip, he kind of saw some of these, what I thought were actually off-limits books. But they mentioned very specifically that no knowledge is forbidden in Kamertage, just practices. And so he sneaks back into the library and he opens a book and he starts playing with the Eye of Agamotto.
That's right. And I love this scene, Caleb, with the apple. The idea of an apple being a forbidden fruit from the Bible, right? And yep, the director stated that's intentionally why they left the apple in there, because he is messing with time and the Eye of Agamotto. Which, of course, is also in the comics. But in the comics, it's an actual eye.
Like, yeah. Well, it's an amulet with an eye like inside of it.
But it has an eye inside of it that sometimes twitches.
Yeah, it's not an Infinity Stone in the comics like it is here.
No. The wearer of the Eye of Agamotto is the Sorcerer Supreme. So that's kind of how you know who the Sorcerer Supreme is on Earth. And apparently, Agamotto was the first Sorcerer Supreme and had three eyes. And each eye denotes something, like the first was power, the second's truth, and the third one is presence. And Doctor Strange in the comics has presence. And so he can use it to like reveals stuff and allows him to see stuff. I think it later on gives him more powers, but it's
kind of like a catch-all for whatever he needs to do.
Pretty much. But, you know, I liked it in here that they introduced that this eye is the Time Stone.
Yeah, which is something they don't reveal until the end. But yeah, I think what Marvel's trying to do is not introduce too many powerful objects into the universe because it makes the Infinity Stones feel less special. And so they really needed to get these out there. So this was just as good a place as any.
And watching this again, I was kind of intrigued that they decided to go this route because they just introduced magic. They just introduced the multiverse. And now they're messing with space-time continuum. So they have a lot going on here.
Yeah, yeah, they really do.
As Doctor Strange is messing with the Eye of Agamotto, Mordu and Wong find him and kind of put a stop to him. But then he asks them about basically to lay everything out on the table. And so they explain a sorcerer's role as well as Dormammu.
They name drop him as the Destroyer of Worlds. Now, this isn't exactly the same, but Zach, when they said this, I keep thinking of Galactus, who's known as the Devourer of Worlds or the Eater of Worlds. It almost seems like they were trying to sub Dormammu in for Galactus because they don't have the rights for him in the movies.
You know, it really feels like that because in the comics, he is the ruler of the dark dimension like he is in this movie, but he's like a humanoid being with a flaming head. And that's pretty much it. He's not like a destroyer of worlds. He's more the ruler of the dark dimension, and he would like to rule everything.
Yeah, so a bit different here.
It really is. And it's here they also explain what a sorcerer's role is, that while the Avengers protect the physical, sorcerers defend mystical. I loved that explanation.
It explains why they're here and why they're necessary, and also how they're different from the Avengers.
Exactly. And so they show Doctor Strange that there's three sanctums: Hong Kong, London, and New York. Which, unfortunately, the London one is getting attacked by Caecilius and his acolytes and gets destroyed, which thrusts Doctor Strange into the New York Sanctum.
That's right. In the comics, this is where Doctor Strange lives. This is kind of his home. And so here we're introduced to it.
Do you know what street it's located off of?
Is it Bleecker Street?
It is. I was going to say, are you a nerd? That's like I want to test. It's 177A Bleecker Street, New York, New York. This is the residence of Doctor Strange in the comics. It's also the residence of the Defenders and of the New Avengers.
Oh, interesting. I did not know this is where the New Avengers hang out.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of superheroes have hung out here before us.
But so while he's here, he's really flung into a fight. And this is the first time I think we really get to see him try to use magic in a fight. He's not very proficient at it.
No, he's not. I mean, he has the help of the Cloak of Levitation, which we see. And Caleb, I don't know if you've read any of the first few comics, but it's like it's blue. Like, it's not even red. It doesn't become red until, I think, 13 comics later.
They had to dye it. They didn't like the color. It was basically the costume.
And it's very different because in the comics, it just gives him the power of levitation and flight. Whoever wears it gets that power. Here, it's like it has a mind of its own.
Yeah, it's kind of sentient, which I think it's funny when it's used correctly. But a lot of the time, actually, it doesn't play in too much. So I think it's fine.
Yeah, it is fine. And before Doctor Strange jumps into battle, we see a quick, very, very quick death of the sorcerer who was head over the New York Sanctum. Do you know what his name was?
I believe they refer to him as Master Drum.
It is. So in a deleted scene, we get a little more of it. His full name is Daniel Drum, and he's actually in the comics, and he's pretty big in the comics. He is the brother of another sorcerer, Jericho, who is Brother Voodoo. So in the comics, Daniel Drum becomes Brother Voodoo, dies, and then his brother Jericho takes up the mantle, and Daniel basically somehow is able to enter into his brother's body as an astral projection. And so it's like both brothers are living at the same time. One's physical, one's just an astral projection. I think that if we do get another movie, Brother Voodoo will definitely be making an appearance in Doctor Strange 2. And so there's a funny scene with the Mr. Doctor, it's Strange. Well, who am I to judge?
That was, yeah, that's kind of funny.
Probably the best line, but you're right. So we get a fight scene here between Caecilius and his acolytes and Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange is able to put up a really good fight. A lot of that, I believe, is because of the sentient cloak of levitation.
Yep, saves him a couple times.
An interesting Easter egg is that while one of the acolytes falls through one of the windows that transports him to the desert, the sound effect here is a Tatooine, the sound that we get while on Tatooine in Star Wars.
Which particular sound? There's a lot of sounds.
It's like the ooh. That's super incorrect, but it's that.
I still don't know what you're talking about, but that's okay.
Doctor Strange also during this fight grabs like what looks like a chalice. Caecilius is like, you'd have no idea what to use that. That's actually in the comics. It's called the Evil Eye, and it was wielded by a villain, the Crusader, against the Fantastic Four.
Well, after he kind of subdues Caecilius, we get the motivation, and we find out that really he just wants to live forever. I think we get a little hint here that he feels slighted from the ancient or by the Ancient One. We don't know why yet, but I think he accuses her of drawing from the dark dimension.
I think so. And it's here that, for me, I got the idea that Caecilius is a little brainwashed, is that he has found pages and he believes this is the way to everlasting life, that there's no death. And I almost feel a little bad for him, that he won't listen to what other people say and is just somehow down the wrong path. Now, it's interesting because the director states that he was aware of the backstory of most villains, how it didn't really pan out. And so he just had Caecilius state his motivation rather than show it.
Yeah, and we get here as well. He says, quote, tiny insignificant specks in an indifferent universe when he's talking about people. And this really hits Doctor Strange because he said the exact same thing just a few scenes earlier. And this is kind of bringing back the whole time motif, repeating things, time repeating, which is really great. Also to note here, his eyes, Caecilius' eyes, that was practical makeup. They actually put that on his face and it looks almost exactly like that in person.
Yeah, because you have to be bad. Look at your eyes. Great, great line. Well, Doctor Strange is able to make it to hospital after he is, I believe, stabbed with one of those icicles.
Yeah, the invisible knives.
Yeah, he finds Dr. Christine, and Caleb, I'm sorry, but this is not believable, because he finds her, they rush into a room by themselves, and then he starts crashing. I'm an expert, because I watch Grey's Anatomy with my wife. She would have called a code, she would have gotten a crash cart, especially if it's somebody that she loved that was dying. She wouldn't just try to deal with it by herself, even if she had seen something kind of strange.
Well, he specifically tells her only them.
Yeah, but still, I mean, if you told me, just save me.
Yeah, other people would still have rushed in. It's not believable, but it's a movie, so I can give it a pass.
I also didn't think that she was frightened enough to see his astral projection, because you literally just saw a ghost. And she's like, she freaks out for a second. It's like, oh, I'm fine. Like, whatever.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that if you have to lose that reaction in order to further the plot, then that's what I would do.
Yeah, what is real is that after she is able to basically revive him, he takes out the acolyte and then he goes back to the Sanctum Sanctorum, is that she turns around and a broom falls and she like screams and is startled. That was unplanned.
I wondered.
Yeah, the broom just fell. McAdams stayed in character, and so they kept it in.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And, you know, that whole astral projection fight scene is really good. I actually watched a VFX breakdown, and I'm not sure, but I think a lot of this is actually digital.
Yeah, I can believe it.
Yeah, but it looks really, really good.
And so Doctor Strange returns to the Sanctum, and it's here that the Ancient One, as well as Mordu, find him and claim that he is now the master of the Sanctum.
Yes, yeah, so this is the Sanctum that he does have in the comics. So this is kind of a big moment that's sort of kind of brushed aside in the movie because things are happening and they need to get places. But it's also revealed here that the Ancient One might be drawing off of power from the Dark Dimension. It's not 100% confirmed, but she doesn't deny it.
That's correct. And so as the master of the Sanctum, he has to defend it as Caecilius tries once more to destroy the Sanctum. And so he puts all of them into the mirror dimension, inadvertently increasing Caecilius' power, unbeknownst to him. And so there's this amazing New York fight and chase scene. And Caleb, for me, this felt like Inception. I don't know about you.
I remember when the first trailer or the second trailer came out, but the one that showed this, everybody said Inception because Inception had only been a few years earlier. I didn't get that feeling, but I can totally see how you feel that way.
Now, do you think Inception hurt or helped this movie in that way?
I think Inception helped this movie because you think Inception did really well. Inception was a great movie. You instantly get positive feelings And so I think that had people kind of imprint that onto the movie instantly and say, oh, that's really cool. Maybe it'll, you know, maybe it'll be cool like that.
Yeah, I think it took away some of the shock because we've seen all of it before. But on the other hand, you're right. I think it did ultimately help the movie.
It's also around here that we get our Stan Lee cameo.
That's right. He's on a bus and he's reading The Doors of Perception, a book that came out in 1954, which is basically just about drugs. And Scott Derrickson wanted to include that because of, as I talked about before, how a lot of the early readers thought the early writers of the comic book were on shrooms while writing the comic.
Well, through some various means and awesome visual effects here, we do finally end up with the Ancient One coming in and taking on Caecilius.
That's right. We get an awesome reverse effect where she is able to kind of stop what's happening and like reverse some of the time. It's a great visually pleasing battle, which ultimately leads to the Ancient One's demise, where she is stabbed, falls about 80 stories, and somehow still lives. I don't
know. Yeah, but I mean, right before that, we do get that confirmation that she is drawing power off the dark dimension. And Zach, I just want to mention, this is actually foreshadowed earlier in the film, that opening scene where we see her fight Caecilius. The folding that she's doing in that dimension, we only see her and Caecilius do it. And it's mentioned earlier in this film that because they're connected to the dark dimension, they have that extra power. So that's kind of a callback and kind of a foreshadowing, if you could see it, that she is drawing off that power.
That is correct. Now, Caleb, it's here. I would like to bring up, when is this movie set? Because during this whole New York fight scene, we see, as a bunch of the towers are getting folded in, we see the Avengers Tower is clearly displayed. Now, I didn't see it on my first view and I had to go back and make sure I saw it, but it's kind of in the corner and you see that folding in, which means the Avengers have not yet moved to upstate New York. Also, if you remember in The Winter Soldier, Jasper Sitwell says that Hydra is keeping tabs on Stephen Strange, which would be odd if you were keeping tabs on a neurosurgeon. It wouldn't make sense. And so is this movie actually set in 2016 or is it set back in 2014?
There's a lot of talk about this on the internet. I think at one point the director came out and said when this movie takes place, because it's not clear how long he's in Camartage. I will say, in the opening of the film, you see a shot of the city. The Avengers Tower is there at that point as well. So it's definitely after the Avengers at some point. But I don't actually know what happened to Avengers Tower. It's still there in Spider-Man Homecoming, actually. So the Avengers still could have moved to upstate New York.
The Avengers Tower is there, yes, but is the A on there? Is it called the Avengers Tower? Because I thought in Spider-Man Homecoming, it's different?
I don't remember if it's different in that movie, but it does have the A on it, and both shots are talking about in this film.
And in Spider-Man Homecoming, that's actually not set in 1617. That's also moved back in the time frame. So my assumption is that this actually takes place in 2013, 2014.
Possibility?
Fact. And so Doctor Strange does try to save the Ancient One by bringing her to the hospital, where at this point, Dr. Christine does get a bunch of people, like she did in the last one. And it's also here that Dr. Stephen Strange trusts Dr. Nicodemus West to save the life of the Ancient One.
And so while they're dying, they both kind of go off. Well, she's dying. Not both of them. They kind of go off into an astral projection and watch this beautiful shot of the rain and the snow and the lightning when they have this really touching conversation.
But it's here, Caleb, that I actually have kind of an issue with this, because it's during this time that she states time is relevant and they're watching everything at slow speed. And I'm not really sure how that's possible, because I thought everything moves at normal speed. We already saw that earlier on in the film when you're in the astral projection. And the only way to then slow down time is with like the Eye of Agamotto or something incredibly powerful. So I'm not really sure where this came out of.
I think you might be mistaken, Zach, because in the mirror dimension, time moves normally, but in the astral plane, time moves very much slowly. I think it is a little bit inconsistent. Maybe you can control the time and how fast it goes, but if you remember when he first gets put into the astral projection form, his body and the Ancient One like stops moving. Like he starts falling backwards and it just pauses there and he's moving. The same thing happens here. She mentions that he hasn't even hit the floor yet. But to your point, in the hospital, they're moving full speed. So maybe they can kind of control how fast time moves. Although, now that I'm thinking about this, I think we only see the hospital moving at full speed from Palmer's perspective. So maybe they are moving much slower and we're just seeing the effects of it from her angle.
No, that still wouldn't make sense because the amount of how slowly it's moving wouldn't match up to real life. So by the time that Palmer is finally able to shock Doctor Strange, their fight would have been long done and that acolyte would have been walking away with the astral form of Stephen Strange dead.
Potentially. I think it is a small issue, but I think the kind of correct way to think about it is time moves slowly.
We also get an explanation by the Ancient One that while, yes, she drew power from the Dark Dimension, it was for good. Well, unfortunately, the Ancient One does die. It's right after this we get an embrace by Dr. Christine Palmer and Dr. Stephen Strange, who I thought, for the most part, I actually enjoyed the relationship. It wasn't like a Tony Stark Pepper Potts relationship, but it was like an Ant-Man Wasp. It was okay.
Yeah, I think it was decent.
And we also get a funny moment as well where Stephen Strange pops his collar like it is again in the comics with his cloak.
Yeah, I noticed that at one point how it was turned over and I thought it was weird. But while this is happening, Caecilius is still on his rampage and we see Wong and several others prepare for a fight. And there's an Easter egg in here, Zach. There's a character that has a special looking weapon.
That's right. Tina Minoru. Minoru?
Something like that. She's got this staff that's got this circle kind of thing on the top of it. It's a very recognizable weapon.
The Staff of One.
The Staff of One. Yeah. And she's a character from the comics.
That's correct. Well, not just the comics. She's now a character sort of on a TV show because she is the mother of Nico Minoru.
Yes, from The Runaways.
And so Doctor Strange and Mordu arrive in Hong Kong only to find that they are late to the fight and that Dormammu is already invading Earth. And so using the power of the Eye of Agamotto, Doctor Strange starts to reverse time. Here, I thought the CGI and effects were very cool. It looked amazing. But I also think it kind of set the standard that the fact that while they are reversing time, you can break out of that if you are powerful enough. Because the acolytes, as well as Caecilius, were able to reverse the reversal of time. Well, that they were stuck there.
Yeah, they were able to break out of it, which is a really cool idea. And in fact, I think this whole setup is really awesome. The fact that they go in and it's already been, the sanctum is already lost, I think is a phenomenal twist on what we expect in a film. You expect them to go there and have a massive climactic battle, and they do ultimately, but before that happens we get this. And I think this whole reversal and trying to dodge stuff while it's building itself back up is a phenomenal visual style and idea.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Great twist.
But while this fight's going on, it's not all happy times. The Dark Dimension does ultimately open up, and to kind of stop all this stuff from happening, Strange has to bargain with Dormammu.
That's right. So he flies, which he does a lot in the comics, so that was kind of cool to see. And he enters the Dark Dimension, and this is our second glimpse or encounter with Dormammu. We saw him briefly before, but this is kind of the full picture of him. He was okay. I was kind of saddened that he wasn't his comic book version. He was this planet, which is interesting because the next movie we get is Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which also has a planet as a villain.
Yeah, well, actually, if you look very closely, he's not a planet. He's actually a very large humanoid figure. It's very hard to see, but you can actually see like his shoulders and stuff if you look off to the side. And in fact, the directors have talked about how this doesn't necessarily have to be his form. The whole idea of the Dark Dimension is a dimension that's constantly changing, and so Dormammu himself constantly can change, and so he could take probably any form. The reason he looks like this here is to kind of mirror Doctor Strange. And in fact, Benedict Cumberbatch did the motion capture for Dormammu to kind of help sell that mirror idea that they're two sides of a similar coin.
Oh, that's really cool. I didn't know that. And so here, Doctor Strange sets a trap by altering time so that when he is killed, he just comes back. So he kind of sets this time loop.
Yeah, and I kind of had a question about how this worked, but then I remembered, it was magic. don't worry about it.
Not everything has to make sense. These death scenes were fairly graphic.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of death scenes. And some of Caecilius's deleted scenes, those were also graphic. He would kill people. And I think the second deleted scene, he cuts a guy in half. And he doesn't, like, slide or anything. You can't see that. But when he cuts him, the animation, you can kind of see that he's in half. Like, it's kind of very dark for this movie. I was surprised.
Yeah, well, I mean, this movie does have kind of a darker tone following that black magic type thing in the comics, which I like. But, you know, I also really like this type of resolution, how it's not a punching type of fight at the end. It's not everybody just having a big brawl. It's a more intelligent way to beat your opponent, really. And I think that it's one of the few Marvel films that has done something like this. And you know, side note, also during this scene, we mentioned Dormammu's design a little bit earlier. There's a point in here where it almost looks like there's fire emanating from the bottom of his head. There's this very red-orangey glow that starts to come up that they did as a Easter egg to kind of point back to his comic design. But, you know, back to the resolution. I really like this. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a very different ending than I was expecting, but it works.
Yeah, and so ultimately, he gives in, and Doctor Strange is able to fly back, and Dormammu takes back Caecilius and the other followers into his dimension. Now, while those people are being pulled into the dimension, they kind of crystallize into this rocky-type form, and they their eyes kind of combine, and they get this one eye, kind of like Cyclops. This is a reference to the Mindless Ones in the comics, who are, I believe, from the Dark Dimension. They're kind of this mindless horde. Think like the Chitauri, but dumber, that is used quite often.
Yeah, it was a great Easter egg, and their change was also fairly graphic as well. Like a bunch of those all in one. And so after they win, and we haven't talked about this, but they also kind of resurrect Wong, who is now alive after dying. We go back to Kamar-Taj, where Stephen Strange drops off the Eye of Agamotto, and it is explained that this is an Infinity Stone.
That's right. Mordo is not with them at this point. He kind of walked off because he decided he didn't like the messing with time, and so this has kind of convinced the Doctor that, you know, he needs to put it back down. He's not quite ready for it. Wong tells him that this is an Infinity Stone, and maybe someday you'll wear it. And there's a lot of foreshadowing here, I think. He says that news of the Ancient One's death will spread through the universe, and that will kind of invite threats to come to Earth. I think that's probably, one, a nod to Thanos in the impending doom with that, but also other mystical threats that I'm hoping we will get in a sequel to this film.
And roll credits. Now we do have our two stingers that we usually do in a Marvel movie. The first one taken from Thor Ragnarok. So we have Doctor Strange and Thor, which I thought was a great Easter egg because I had no idea Thor would appear in this movie.
Yeah, I had no idea as well. And this is a funny scene, but it also shows off some magic. And there's also a small Easter egg in here. Doctor Strange is wearing yellow gloves, which he has in the comics as part of his costume.
Yeah, yellow gloves with black dots on it, kind of like a cheetah print, but a little smaller.
Yeah, and so he's constantly filling this this mug of mead or beer or something for Thor, which is just hilarious. But this is a scene that is taken almost directly from Ragnarok, not these exact cuts, not these exact lines, but they did film it on that set.
And our after-credits scene takes place with Mordu, who has been tracking down the individual who was able to use magic so that he can walk again.
Yeah, and I kind of have some issues with this. This seems to go against some of the stuff that he just said at the end of the movie about how he feels about magic and how things should be used. I get why, because he's a villain in the comics, and so we have to make him villainous. It seemed very reminiscent of the Sinestro after the credit scene in Green Lantern, where he's good for the whole movie, and then at the very end, he turns bad. So I hope that his motivation is fleshed out more in a potential sequel, because if it's not, it feels like a really big jump to go from idealistic, you shouldn't mess with the time continuum to, oh yeah, I'm just going to kill everyone and I should have all the magic.
Yeah, I'm sure if they do a sequel, they will explain that a little more. But for the time being, it was an interesting tidbit. So Caleb, with the movie wrapped up, how did Doctor Strange being all mystical and magically, compare with the other MCU movies, or just do in general, commercially and critically?
Well, it was ultimately released on November 4th, 2016, with a budget of $165 million, so a bit lower from some of our other films, but it had a worldwide gross of $677 million, which is a lot. In fact, it's the highest grossing single character origin film, basically meaning excluding Guardians, of any of Marvel's origin films. All of the Phase 1, Ant-Man, all of it.
So, wow, incredible.
Yeah, that's very impressive, I think. Rotten Tomatoes currently has it sitting at an 89%. I know it used to be at a 90. I guess it just dropped a little bit. And Metacritic has it sitting at a 72. General consensus for this film was very positive. Mostly, I think, thanks to the casting and the visuals. In fact, it was nominated for 56 different awards, which that might be the most out of any of the films that we've talked about, but it did win 7 of those, almost all of them special effects related.
I could believe that.
Yeah, so good.
Now, when we look at the legacy of this movie, what strikes me first is that they haven't announced that there's going to be a Doctor Strange 2 yet. I think you have a lot of material you could pull from. I've mentioned Brother Voodoo. Caleb, you've mentioned the Nightmare and the Dream Dimension, but it's yet to be announced.
Yeah, and there's actually just news about that this week that Cumberbatch has not heard about it. Part of that, I believe, is because of the secrecy surrounding post-Infinity War movies. You know, they've announced very, very few purposely to keep people in suspense. Because if you know a Doctor Strange movie is coming out next year, you know he's not going to die in the Infinity War movie. So they want to keep some of that suspense. I'm hoping that they are going to do a sequel. I would be very surprised if they did not.
Yeah, same here. I mean, in the comic world, after this movie came out, well, before this movie came out, they did relaunch his comics in 2015. And currently, I mean, it's still cranking. It's still going. They're at issue 390 as of this week.
Wow, okay. And, you know, the comics have had a lot of shakeups over the years, so I'm not sure if 390 means actually 390.
Yeah, exactly.
Or what, because they keep renumbering them. But that's impressive.
As far as the greater MCU, we now know that this isn't the only universe. There are multiverse out there.
Yes, and this is very, very exciting, Zach. I mentioned earlier, you know, this is a big plot point in the Avengers recently.
Do you think we'll see some of these other dimensions in Infinity War or beyond?
Definitely beyond. 100% beyond. I'm not quite sure about Infinity War. I would not be surprised if we saw some in the sequel, Avengers 4. But I think a Doctor Strange sequel will see it. Hopefully, we will see this with maybe a new villain, like a new Thanos for the universe. I read somewhere today that Kevin Feige has confirmed that there's not going to be an overarching villain for Phase 4, which I don't remember reading myself. But if they do one, I think it would be interesting to do an interdimensional type villain.
Exactly.
You know, the other thing this movie did really, really well, though, Zach, is it introduced this real magic. We talked about it a little bit. It's not the science-based quantum mechanics explained magic of Thor. In the comics, Thor has real magic type stuff. They changed that for the movies because it was a technological universe. Now that people are accustomed to these kind of crazier ideas, especially with Guardians coming out, they went full magic with this, and I love it. Not everything has to be explained. But I did have a complaint about this when this film came out. I felt that there was not enough magic in this film. Watching it this time, because I think this is only the second time I've seen it.
Sure.
That's unwarranted, I think. There is a ton of magic in this movie. In fact, I made a list. I probably missed some stuff. But the types of magic they do in this movie is time. There's the magic whips. There's the magic shields. There's the mirror dimension. There's the sling rings. The air-type weapons, which you kind of referred to, I think, as ice or something like that. Walking on walls, altering reality, astral projection, flying. That's at least 10 different things that are in this movie. I'm not even mentioning, like, the in the Sanctum Sanctorum, those teleporting-type windows that they can go through. And so I don't think the fact that it needs more magic is valid. I do think, however, variety of magic is a valid criticism. Because I think the reason I thought this is for the heroes and the villains, you like have three or four types of magic, right? You have those air swords, you have shields, or you have whips. And everybody, depending on what side you're on, has those things. I wanted crazy through the roof magic in this movie where people could just do things and people have their own spells that they use, which isn't what we got. But I do think moving forward, seeing the Doctor Strange stuff and the other movies he's been in, we're going to see a lot more of that going forward.
And I don't think you could technically do all of that in an origin story. They had to cap it somewhere. Like you said, Caleb, they introduced 10 new types of magic. They introduced new dimensions, the multiverse, time continuum. And I think you had to cap it somewhere. But for sure, in a sequel, they will expand on that indefinitely. All right, Caleb. Well, where does Doctor Strange fall in your rankings of Marvel movies?
All right, Zach. Well, I actually really like this movie. I think it is a very solid movie. I do think the pacing is off in certain places, maybe because it's a bit long, probably because they've got so much to explain. But there's a lot of good here. I think all of the actors are excellent in their roles. I think it's very well cast. The costume is great. The visuals are great. I think the visuals have not been repeated since this movie and probably will not be repeated until they do a sequel, which is very impressive for a new idea in Hollywood. I think that this lays the groundwork for future films very, very well. I do have some complaints like we've talked about. You know, I wish it was a little bit more mystical. I wish it was a little bit more magical. But for the first magical entry in the MCU, I think is very, very solid. So for me, it feels kind of not middle of the road, but higher middle of the road, right? And so I look at my list and I compare it a lot to Thor. Personally, I feel it's very similar to Thor and how it feels and what it does for the universe. And so I have to decide where around Thor I'm going to put it, if I'm going to put it above it or below it. I hate saying this, but really for this one, I feel this could change at any moment because they're so similar. I think I am going to put it above Thor, probably solely because of its visuals. And this is probably because it came out so much sooner than Thor. So it's going to have better visuals because it's newer. But I do really like this film and I would recommend this for anyone, even if you haven't seen the rest of the MCU. So, Zach, this brings my current list of movies, starting from number one, going all the way down to number 14 at this point, as Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Captain America Civil War, Guardians of the Galaxy, The Avengers, Iron Man, Doctor Strange at number 6, Thor, Avengers Age of Ultron, Thor the Dark World, Captain America the First Avenger, Ant-Man, The Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 3, and Iron Man 2 at the bottom of my list. Zach, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Caleb, I like this movie a lot. I think Benedict Cumberbatch did a fantastic job. It was a great casting choice here. And I am really excited to see him in a sequel and see what he does in Infinity War and beyond. There are some negatives to this movie. I thought Mads Mikkelsen was a classic Marvel villain. They tried to make him better. It's still kind of a trope. I didn't really like any of the hospital scenes. I thought a lot of them were unbelievable. But I think the good definitely outweighs the bad. The casting was great. I loved all the magic that happened in this movie. This is a good movie to turn on, watch on a Friday night, and just enjoy it. And so how that falls in my list is when I look at all the other MCU movies, some of these are groundbreaking, some of these are awful and I never want to watch again. And so Doctor Strange probably falls in the middle tier of my list. So I put it around Captain America, which is my number 7. It's not as good as my top 4, which would be Civil War, Winter Soldier, Avengers, and Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't think it's better than Iron Man or Ant-Man. And so it's kind of around Captain America, which is my number 7, or Avengers Age of Ultron, which is my number 8. And I think it's better than Avengers Age of Ultron, but not as good as Captain America, which means Doctor Strange is my number 8. So to round out my list, it is now Captain America Civil War as number 1, Captain America Winter Soldier is number 2, The Avengers is 3, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 is 4, Iron Man is 5, Ant-Man is 6, Captain America is 7, Doctor Strange as number 8, Avengers Age of Ultron is number 9, Thor 2 is number 10, the original Thor is 11, Iron Man 2 is 12, Incredible Hulk is 13, and Iron Man 3 is 14. And I would like to say that while this is kind of middle in my pack, it's a fantastic movie. And as you've said in our earlier podcast, Caleb, it's just very hard to rank all of these in list.
All right, Zach. Well, we want to let our listeners know that we actually have a new website. This launched a couple weeks ago, but it is now up for you guys. And really, what this website is used for is so you can see all the different places that we have our podcast available. We've heard from a few users, and they didn't know that it was on YouTube or that it was on iHeartRadio or some of these other places. So if you can head on over to our website, which is cuzwerenerds.com, that's CUZWERENERDS.com. You can see a list of all of those. And this is also a great way to make it easy to share with friends.
That's right. Go check it out. Share it with friends. We really appreciate you telling anybody about our podcast.
And we very much want to thank you for listening.
And Caleb, by the hoary hoofs of Haggoth, we also need to thank Taylor Poole.
Yes, thank you, Taylor Poole, for doing our awesome intro music. We love it a lot. I used it in a video recently. You should go check that video out on our Facebook page, by the way. Very funny nod to the recently released Infinity War trailer.
That's right.
But you can find Taylor at taylorpoolmusic.com. That's TaylorPoole music.com.
And when you're not rocking it out with Taylor Poole at his website, you can check out our friends over at CNC Power Hour. They stream magic or video games throughout the week on Twitch. That's C, the letter N, C, Power Hour. Thanks for listening to 'Cause We're Nerds, Road to Marvel's Infinity War, Doctor Strange. We would love to hear your comments or feedback at cuzwerenerds@gmail.com. That's CUZWERENERDS@gmail.com. Or leave us a review on iTunes or Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, and any other major social or podcasting sites. Join us next week as we crank up the music for Volume 2 of Guardians of the Galaxy. How did the second installment of this space opera compare to the first box office surprise? Is Baby Groot a reincarnation of Groot, or is he actually Groot's kid? And how did this movie help set the stage for Marvel's Phase 4? Find out these questions and much more on 'Cause We're Nerds, Road to Marvel's Infinity War, Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2. Stay nerdy. Wow. Dormammu, yeah, help me.
Do you need the Heimlich?
Yeah, I don't know what that was. Oh, goodness. Let me drink a cool, crisp, refreshing Dr. Pepper ad. Now I'm fully energized and ready to go.
Dr. Pepper, if you want to give us some money, we'd happily take it for that plug.